And this hour, we're going to take your calls with John Zerzan as we talk about his thoughts of this planet. You're next with us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, John Zerzan with us. John, if you had that ideal situation where you could just wave a magic wand and make it all happen, how would you have this planet? How would you have society?
Well, I'd like to be part of face-to-face community. In fact, I would argue that that's really the only valid definition of community when it's face-to-face. That's, in part, that's could be a reference to hunter-gatherer band society. That's one form of it, where you have accountability. You know, you are part of a group that needs each other. You've got the human touch. You've got the direct responsibility. I lived in a housing co-op here for 15 years, and it was a little bit like that. I'm not saying it was, you know,
ideal.
Right, it existed in, you know, the dominant society, but I learned a lot from that. And, you know, where you, 50 people, and, you know, if somebody's screwing up, they got to face the music, you know. You don't just call some expert to bail you out if you rely upon each other in that way.
But is it realistic nowadays? I mean, have we gone too far to be able to pull back a little bit?
Well, I don't know. That remains to be seen. I just think we have to make the effort. It may not really go anywhere. You've got to admit that. But, you know, making the effort is probably worth it. And on more levels than one, perhaps it's worth it, even if you fail. But it's, I don't think people are very happy with the way things are going. And when you think of what's it going to be like even 5 years from now, you know, just think about that for a minute. Is there something that's important that's going in a good direction? That's what's so frightening about it.
Well, I there's no question about that. It's concerning to a lot of people. And, you know, there are a lot of people out there who are not happy for whatever reason, whether it's government intervention and, you know, the COVID situation, the lockdowns and whatever's happening. Just people just don't seem to be as happy as they can be. But can they be happy internally? How do you do that?
Well, we don't know actually how much, quote, happiness or whatever, fulfillment, authenticity. These are hard to define even now. But if, you know, going back in time, it does seem that things were pretty stable and that there were solutions that people had and employed. And the anthropological literature is, you know, quite a lot of that stuff. In other words, dealing with conflict. How do you, and the answers are more obvious, again, if you're in a face-to-face situation, well, you've got to work it out. You, it's not some bureaucratic answer or, you know, coming down on high and a whole set of bureaucratic laws and stuff. It's, you know, you're there and you've got a deal.
John, was there one thing that happened in your life as you were growing up or as you evolved that got you to think this way?
Well, you know, what I think of the most is that in the 80s, I was working on other stuff, more social theory stuff, and I discovered by accident the anthropological literature. I had no idea, because some of the stuff I've just been saying sounds like such a kind of made-up utopian stuff, but it's not. It's there. And that's what's kind of, it's, well, frustrating, too, because, like, these academics know this. All you can add is that, well, the radical implications are just obvious. You know, it worked. You know, people did get along without pandemics and without the state and so on for up to 2 million years. We were using fire over 1 million years ago. I mean, so much we don't know. We don't even know when language started or speech started. We know when written language started. That's easy because you got the artifacts. But, you know, I think to me, it just seemed like, wow, this just changed my thinking. And made it more radical in the sense of possibilities.
I do like air conditioning. Technology did wonders there.
Oh, I know. I do, too.
See? It does have some powerful places.
Oh, yeah. Well, people are going to need more and more AC, and of course that only makes everything worse. You've got a more of an energy drain. You know, it's of course you need it. People die in the heat out west here.
Oh, absolutely. There's
not
no
just
question.
Here, but lots of places.
Let's go to the phones. Thomas in La Jolla, California, to get us started. Hello, Tom.
Hi, George. Thank you for accepting my call.
Of course.
John Zierzan. Wow, what a pleasure. A comment and then a question. I guess I'm a young adult of the 60s and read like a French anarchist author Guy Debord, The Politics of the Spectacle. Mm-hmm. And then maybe about a decade ago, I came across your essays through the anarchist publisher Loom Panix. And I read your essays in the book called Elements of Refusal. And it had a very profound effect on me. Thank you.
Okay.
And the one effect on me was I unplugged from TV, from the internet. I have a landline, but I don't have a smartphone, that type of thing. And I realized, you know, you made a powerful argument about, you know, like you're saying earlier in the interview about face-to-face, you know, communication with your neighbors, with your community, mm-hmm. that type of thing, instead of interacting through a smartphone or Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, you see what I mean, or getting all of your experience of the world from TV, you see what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I unplugged largely from reading your works, and wow, it made such a difference in my life. But yet I still had to interact with the world. And, you know, I would meet with my friends, we would go to restaurants, and I would say, what are you doing? You're on your smartphone through the whole meal, you know, and they're like, you know, constantly posting on Facebook, that type of thing. It was so surreal, unreal, but yet surreal.
Yeah.
So, and then I had to, I got into a law, well, I got sued. And so I went to the local law library in our town, and that shocked me, John. Our local law library, it's an archive of everything, local, state, federal, international laws, regulations, statutes, ordinances, codes, tax codes, dress codes, executive orders, everything that applies to us legally, and everything that we're accountable for, you know, accountable, you know, you either follow these laws or you go to jail or you pay a fine, etc. And there weren't, you know, I asked the librarian, I said, how much of this applies to me? And it wasn't like 100 pages or 1,000 pages or 100,000 pages. It was literally millions of pages
wow.
of laws. You see what I mean? And it applies to me. It applies to you. Anybody can verify this by going to their local law library. And so gets me to my question with you, John. I respect your writings. And what practices do you practice in your life that unplugs you from this technological, you know, monster that we've created and forces you to be face-to-face with the community?
Well, I regret that I'm not in that housing co-op anymore. That was 15 years where I had more of direct experience in that way, but you are really doing the job. I mean, I take my hat off to you. It's tough. We have to navigate all these things that are already set up and, you know, legally enforced, as you say. And if you want to be something of a public thinker, you know, there are these channels. And, you know, I mean, this coast to coast here. This is lovely because it is an open. Lots of people can partake. I mean, but that's certainly not the rule of availability of discourse. I mean, what kind of conversation happens in society where you can think about practical alternatives? You know, there's very little, and I think you're doing really well with it. I don't live very differently. We bicycle a lot. We had a shared car, and, you know, you try to do these little things, and I don't think you can, you know, it's not enough. I mean, I'm sure you would agree with me, but, you know, you do what you can.
Is there some way, John, that we can balance things that you prefer and technology and make it mix?
Well, that would be nice to think so, but I just don't really feel that you can't really green up civilization or I'm not closing the door to it because I think there would have to be transitional things that wouldn't be maybe ideal to everyone, but it can go in that direction and not settle for just salvaging civilization if you've come to the conclusion that on a primary level, civilization itself, domestication, is really the problem which drives all the rest. You know, this civilization is dying. There's only one left, the global, you know, standardized civilization, capital and technology, and that's it, with very, very few exceptions. Different cultures, but there's really only one big civilization left, and it's bringing every form of life, apparently, down with it.
Let's go to first-time caller David in Salt Lake City, Utah. Hello, David. Go ahead.
Hi. So while I agree with John and Ted Kaczynski, it seems like a lot of platitudes and like ideologues. So you know, I would say from a technology standpoint, a low-technology society, when it meets a high-technology society, mm-hmm. will always be enslaved by the high technology society. So you can choose to opt out of the technology society, but I mean, a prime example would be the American Indians when the Europeans showed up.
Good point.
Other than germs and steel. And if the Europeans hadn't done it, the Chinese would have, or, you know, whoever. And so it seems like it's a system that if you try to, and I'm interested in your input on this, if you try to move towards more of a hunter-gatherer society like, the American Indians, how you prevent being colonized or dominated by, for lack of a better term, societies who would choose to dominate, enslave you, and take your resources, which, again, even in hunter-gatherer societies, a war over resources was the norm, not the exception.
No, I'm afraid that's not at all the case. There was that latter point, but maybe we shouldn't get way off into that. But I think your basic question is how can this be overcome? And I would say only unless and until people who have gone through civilization realize what a dead end it is, how unhealthy, what a suicide trip it is, and I don't think that's inconceivable.
It is conceivable, though, that the high technology society always tries to control the lower technology.
Oh yes, definitely, and that's the rule of thumb. Very few exceptions, but the main struggle to eradicate hunter-gatherer society is a little bit overlooked even in the literature. It was a really big struggle. I mean, they didn't give up their freedom easily, and I'm generalizing here, of course, but that was not thought of as such a great idea by a lot of people, but we know who won.
Let's go to Michael in Denver. Hey, Mike, go ahead.
Good morning, George. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you.
And, John, thank you so much for being here tonight. Your book, Questioning Technology, was amazing, and to be able to talk to you tonight is really special, so thank you.
Thank you.
And I just had a comment and a question tonight. So John, when we talk about technology and specifically, you know, regarding social media during this pandemic, you know, it has absolutely skyrocketed. And, you know, what I see is younger people, Gen Z, have become totally dependent on social media. And, you know, I think a lot of that is out of fear. And also consumerism, society's promotion of, you know, people's need for material things, things they might not even need. So my question surrounding this is, how do you think that COVID-19 has accelerated people's dependency on consumerism and social media?
Well, I think you're right to imply that it has. You know, everything is Zoomed or Skyped when you can't have face-to-face interaction. Because of the pandemic, I mean, that's. I think things were going in that direction pretty prominently already, but yeah, it didn't help. And the question is, how will that maybe obtain into the future? I mean, you get things like techno medicine, where you just do it online, and there's no human touch. You know, it's really amazing how estranged all this is becoming. And even texting. This is one of the things that's just a particular thing that disturbs me a lot. We've already moved away from the human voice. The human voice, like on the phone, like right now. No, you just text. I don't want to hear your voice.
Well, I got to tell you though, John, that if I talked on the phone with as many people who text me all day, I'd never get anything done.
Well, yeah, that's. I guess I don't text. I'm not going to do it.
You won't
do it.
I'm drawing
the line there. But I know if you're trying to do something in the real world, I'm not saying there's no basis for these things.
There's got to be a happy medium there somewhere.
Well, but there never is. I mean, where's the happy medium? Where's the stasis point? Okay, this is okay. We're not destroying the whole planet with this quite yet. And yet it just keeps on going. It's the same force, and it doesn't seem to yield to reasonable, you know, compromise, or let's have a little hiatus from the onrushing techno developments.
No. John Zerzan with us, the name of his book, When We Are Human. John, when did this book come out? It just came out recently, or it's in paperback now, isn't it?
It's a paperback book. It came out in July.
All right, good for you.
Pretty new,
and people
you.
Can get it on Amazon? Is it all over the place?
Yeah, it's from Farrell House. I guess it's pretty easy to get.
We're going to come back in a moment on Coast to Coast. We're going to take some more phone calls with John Zerzan. Since you've been doing this, and you've been doing it a long, long time, what has been the most satisfying thing for you?
Wow, that's a good question. Well, the opportunity to, you know, to do this kind of work. And like I said, one thing leads to another over the years. And, you know, the next problem presents itself. And it's just been very stimulating. I've had to kind of do without money mostly in my life. But I don't mind that at all compared to the freedom to, you know, maybe be in the university library every day of the week if I feel like it.
Well, I'm glad we give you the platform to give you the right to say what you say. And I think that is worth so much to be able to be able to say that. We're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast. Those of you on hold, we'll get to you. And we'll take some final calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Paul Selig joins us as we talk about his latest work, The Kingdom, a channel text about the spirit world. So make sure you're part of Coast to Coast. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with John Zerzan. His book is When We Are Human, Notes from the Age of Pandemics. And John, since you put this book together, what's been the comments on it?
Well, I have gotten a few reviews, a few interviews behind it. Probably too early to tell. It's just a little less than a month since it rolled out.
Did you have fun writing it?
Oh, yeah. You know, just these different explorations. There's always something to dig into and maybe come up with something that's a little original, one hopes.
You had mentioned earlier that you have a Luddite philosophy, and that means someone who's opposed to new technology, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you could do away with any kind of technology, just get rid of it, what would it be?
All of it. Quite frankly, I'd like,
really?
Yeah, I'd see a Stone Age existence as the only stable thing, and you know, the direction we're going on is, in other words, one way you could put it is, if we don't have a simple, direct, primitive future, there won't be a future.
I'll tell you what, though, World War III will put us back to that Stone Age type without technology, because if we have another world war, it's going to be a doozy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's more and more technology. You got more and more nuclear proliferation, more countries getting the, because, of course, technology only goes in one direction.
Was it Einstein who said when someone asked him what's the third world war going to be, he says, I don't know, but I'll tell you, the fourth world war will be fought with sticks and stones.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, if there's anything left, I guess that would be about it.
West of the Rockies, let's go to McKinley in Rockland, California. Welcome to the show. Hi, McKinley.
Well, thank you, George. See,
thank
I just
you.
Want to add, you know, I think, well, the opening of books and the increase in knowledge has been potentially beneficial. Humanity has lost sight of the whole of things because nothing that we see, the cycles and the creatures on the planet, the sun and the moon and the stars, none of that is plugged into an electrical grid or into an electrical outlet. And because the different energies that are sustaining everything, even they function in many different levels. I mean, the electromagnetic spectrum consists of different levels of energy, and then there are levels of energy that cannot even be seen, which are called dark energy and dark matter and so forth. And I think people have begun to assume that just some single thing, whether it be an electrical grid or whether it be a source of money, and profiteering, consciousless profiteering, is somehow going to prove sustaining. Nature has been sustaining because it functions as a whole, not as a dependency upon any single thing. That's the point that I wanted to make. And then I might add, too, that the great design and the great designer of all of this complexity that we call nature has never asked anyone or sent anyone a bill. And it's all been free. It's been freely provided and freely enjoyed by all of the creatures that long succeeded humankind, and they have continued to survive, even amidst their own contentions. So John, I think as we get a larger picture, a more clear picture of the totality of things, which extends far beyond this planet, I think we'll begin to find some source of real sustenance.
Some middle ground there. What do you think of all that, John?
Well, I think you don't have to look too far to see the natural world in tatters, completely invaded and extorted, and I don't know what planet McKinley's talking about, it, quite frankly. I mean, come on. These are the last days of super exploitation. It's going to run out. You know, there's a wonderful book by Joseph Tainer called The Collapse of Complex Societies, and what it basically says is civilization is a parasite that consumes its host, and then it's over.
Is this something that's going to affect all of us, Chinese, Russian, us? We're not by ourselves, are we?
Right. No. I think it's a global thing because it's an integrated totality of a system. And really, you don't get to be outside of it. Very, very, very few indigenous cultures left, and they're falling pretty fast from disease and industrialism and all the rest of it. It's just, and you know, even something like shootings, the mass shootings in this country, that's starting to spread to other countries. Sadly enough, it isn't just an American thing.
That's true. That is true. Mm-hmm. Jamie in Alhambra, California. Jamie, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Well, hi there, gentlemen. I'm very thank you for taking my call, John, George.
Thank you.
Well, for a long time, I've been pondering these questions. I've read Jacques Ellul's
the technological society, E.F. Schumacher's Small is Beautiful. And it's some of the soundings in subsidiarity and sustainable society. See, the shenanigans, or the, how do you put it, the slippery slope began when science or inappropriate technology started to invade nature, and it's just a short jump to denaturing or exploiting nature. It's a short jump to denature people. Mm-hmm. People need to, we need a technology with a human face. The medieval corporatism, so to speak, this is Catholic social theory, distributive economics. Monks used to take out, clean fens and ponds, you know, that were stagnant and disease-borne. And this was good technology. These monks over, you know, in the 8th century, 10th century,
sure,
built.
It helped the planet.
Beautiful. Yeah, exactly. And so appropriate technology with a human face, see, where men aren't denatured by controlling desensitizing forces, you know, with the advent, you know, of Marx, no, we go back to Luther, the 15th century, Descartes, determinism, rationalism, these philosophies have made man doubt and control, you know, and it comes on up to, you know, Freud and about free will. See, I know I'm kind of all over the place, but what I'm trying to posit is that science, quasi-science, and technology is not something we should be afraid of it if we can dominate it with ethics. And it's a moral problem, too.
And he's right, John, but the problem is it gets exploited, doesn't it?
Well, it dominates us. It's not. It would be nice, you know, it would be technology with a happy face or something, but it certainly has not worked out that way at all.
JW's with us in Arkansas. Welcome to the program. Hi, JW.
Hey, hello, gentlemen. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you, sir.
I haven't called in 4 years, and John, you have inspired me to call because your voice and your reasoning is exquisite. It is just lovely to hear someone who has pondered something as deeply as you have.
Oh, God, thank you.
I'll make this very short because I can hear my own self talk all the time. I was blessed in 1967 to be at the University of California in Santa Barbara. I took a class, and I think the gentleman's name was Brace. He was an anthropologist. And his notion was that man was misnamed anthropologically as Homo sapiens. We should be called Homo adaptabilis, because I see the world as a warrior. That's how I am. I see the world as a warrior and an artist, a writer, and a musician. So I have a mindset. But I'm just wondering, how do you, and I live on and off the grid. I've got running water. I mean, I don't have running water, but I've got electricity. How do you reconcile that notion of adaptability with your Luddite philosophy? Because I'm just curious. I mean, I just don't think technology is going to magically go away. And I would like to be able to a certain extent, control it and not have it control me. And I'll listen to your answer. And again, George, thank you so much. I listen every night to y'all.
Thank
you. It's part of my daily schedule.
Thank you, JW. I feel it. What do you think of that, John?
Well, I agree with him. It's not going to just go away and politely shuffle off the stage. We're going to have to do something about it, and we're going to have to provide some practical alternatives along the way to be able to get there and to be able to connect with people. You know, it's such a tall order. It's a mammoth order. I think, I don't know anyone who thinks that this is, it makes so much sense. This is what's going to happen. It may not happen whatsoever, but we got to try.
What's your prediction of the next 20, 50 years?
I have no idea. You know, right now I think things are on hold to quite a big extent. And who knows if we're even going to come out of this. I hope we do. I hope we get some respite from the COVID thing.
Me too.
But yeah. We may just have one pandemic after another, or maybe we'll have a chance. Maybe this is going to be a kind of wake-up call where we have to kind of reassess, well, going back to normal. Well, was normal so great? I mean, there's some of that questioning going on.
And by the way, with COVID, that's where technology went awry.
Well, we're just held hostage to it in a general way, you know.
But high technology made this thing. I'm convinced of that.
Yeah, it did. I mean, you know, in my own life, I've been subject to it or, you know, captive to it. I had a prostate surgery, and I had radiation emits. That's about as high-tech as you can get.
You had cancer?
Yeah, and I wasn't going to say no thanks because I'm ideologically opposed to the general thing. I mean, I'd rather be alive. And, and we look at the tremendous amount of suffering and death that COVID is, you know, it didn't go away, and now it's as if we needed a reminder. It's
sure. And how are you? You cancer-free now?
Yeah, I believe so, yes.
Good for you.
Thank you.
East of the Rockies, Mark is with us in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hello, Mark.
Hey, let me take you off speakerphone right quick, and I know we're short on time, so
thank you.
I'll get to it. So I'm a PhD medical research scientist, and
excellent.
Man, I want to go so many different ways. First of all, I hate the cell phones, the social media. I don't care what you had for lunch, and you shouldn't care what I had for lunch.
Right.
however, I did hear you say something about a suicide trip or something that sounded kind of 60s-ish. But my point is this, and you kind of said something with your prostate cancer issue. Go back to Stone Age or whatever. What do you imagine the median life expectancy was back then?
Yeah, about 35, 40 years old,
yeah.
I bet.
Well, there's some confusion about that. If you take out the infant mortality, which was pretty high, people did live just about as long as we do. But what skews the thing, and it's a real thing. I'm not trying to just wish it away, but given the infant mortality thing, then when you do the numbers, it makes it look like, well, they only lived to be about 30 years. That's not true. If you survived infancy, you know, you could live to 70 or something.
Unless they got sick, then they were probably up a creek.
Right, but you don't get these pandemic type things. You don't get the infectious diseases until you have more populations grouped together, small band society. It doesn't offer the place for that to develop. So you know, you start to get these infectious diseases, and also the other part of it is the hammering of bad health in terms of work. That wasn't in the picture either. So it's, you know, you really do have kind of a rosy picture of the thing, and which only changes when you have domestication in general terms.
Would you rather write a letter and put a stamp on it and mail it, or send somebody an email?
I regret not doing much correspondence. I correspond with one or two people in prison, but nobody writes letters anymore, and I it's kind of sad to me.
And
the other is a sort of a cheapened version of writing a letter.
Are you going to try any more contact with Ted Kaczynski?
I don't think so.
Something happened there, right?
Yeah, it's probably take a while to get into, but
it's a show by
he'll
itself.
He'll be in prison until he dies, and
and he should.
I won't be visiting him.
All right, very good. Thanks, John. Appreciate everything. You take care of yourself. We're going to come back in a moment. Paul Selig's joining us. We're going to talk about the spirit world here on Coast to Coast AM. So get ready.